So then this is basically it from us about Madison at the hospital, as well?
I found it on September 1st, 1934.
Mm-hmm. So that's as long as she's lived from
the baby.
I keep buying employees for a long period of time.
It's been a wonderful association. It's been a my home, and I think it was that true of all employees.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were treated like part of the family.
We had a loyalty there that I wouldn't trade for anything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful time.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful deal. Oh, yeah.
You were talking about the dietitian. Interestingly enough, I was speaking with a friend of mine who was telling me that she had she was in the summertime while she was going to school, she was going to UCLA. She worked at the hospital. Her name is Madeline Burton. She worked with a dietitian as a student. And she was saying, oh, they have such marvelous food.
Oh, Miss Muirhead would go down to the market and individually pick out every pea and every bean there was not, and would bring them, put them in the back of her car and bring them home.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing that was served there that wasn't the last word.
Mm-hmm.
Even the silver service that we had there at the time, it lasted for a short, didn't it last for a while, it was all gold silver at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even the but they hot deals, you'll be seeing all the top deals. That was the cover. That was good. Of course, those went not too rapidly, but.
Isn't it a wonderful little thing to put the bra in?
Yes.
It's a cover.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Also, my son-in-law was born there on September 1st, 1955, and evidently that was the hottest September 1st ever. And he was saying that his mother had told him that it was so hot, and they had put cakes of ice in the room, and whether it was the living room or the room, I don't know, and had fans blowing on the ice.
I remember those days, yeah. Well, there was a point where you weren't, if you were born at the clinic, you were socially acceptable. Oh, yes. It was.
About being there a couple of Saturdays when I went over to Costco's place. Little girl, about 10 inches great, and she came running up. You took my birth to this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, also, my son of all was saying he can remember, and this obviously was not when he was born, but the wonderful soda fountain.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And these cupboards were all clear. You didn't see the merchandise.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's the alabaster, and not only that, we had an alabaster bowl there. That, and there was an alabaster bowl at the fountain.
Mm-hmm.
And all this, and that's all Philippine mahogany. All this, this is all mahogany. He's here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well, now those ideas were they Dr.
Jones's? Oh yes, oh yes.
Mm. Look at the card.
Oh, yes.
Did you tell her about your party, Christmas party? Yeah.
Oh, we had parties, and we loved parties, but we'd have parties for the children.
That were born there.
See? If you were born there, then on May the 12th, on hospital day, we would have a big party for them. This is a Christmas party, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a tree there.
Yeah, the tree there. This is for the employees and their children.
Uh-huh.
And the children of all the employees. And we'd have a clown come out. This was taken to Dr. Jones' home, I believe, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was a patio right outside my window, but it's closed in now, and that's all at the clinic. But this is surrounded beautiful patio, azaleas and camellias,
mm-hmm.
and the seagulls would dive down here and get the guppies. Now that's now the laboratory is in part of that, I guess. I that business office too.
Yeah.
See, they all looked out on patios and there's a nice and airy time.
And this was part of the medical library. On the other side, there was a place for the
patient.
The library for the patient?
Library for the patient, yes.
Now here, you see, but this is one of the baby parties.
It so happened that we had literally had about 300 babies at one party, the last one. And what was it? Was it the measles? Was that it?
I think so.
I think it was measles.
Check it out. That's one little complication.
So that was the last one. I mean, but they made a mistake on that. I mean, look at that one's all right. It's been tucked under on that one. I remember when I sent back because the bed wasn't made properly.
Yeah, this is the patient's room?
Yes. Patient, oh, yes.
When the patient made the reservation to come in, they ordered the flowers.
No patient ever came in without having flowers there for them.
And you have carpeting on the floor?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh.
And if you can understand, in those days, everything had to be linoleum or had to be there, and you never have a patient's room with carpet.
Yeah.
So we were far ahead of this, and we had carpets in the room. Except in some of the wards we had the battleship linoleum, is what they used to call them. But in the private rooms, they had the carpet.
And the wooden headboards?
That's right. See, this is all... This is a Hill-Arm bed that was one of the first put out at that time, in which they used the wood. And yet this is the regular hospital springs, and so that you get the different positions on the bed by cranking it.
And the radiators, I never think of heating.
But this was the first time, and of course this was continuous. In other words, there was a continuous flow of water through the radiators there, so there was no lost loss on the bill.
And beautiful bath.
Oh yes, each one had its own private bath. Now that means a tub too. That's operating.
Now see, the medical library was had that old gate so that the patient wouldn't get there at the other.
They couldn't read it.
No, they would not read it anyway.
Yes, they would. All you have to do is to leave some of these medical books out there so the patient gets to them, and naturally, they want to find out what's wrong with them. They're just as curious as you would be.
Yeah, well, I
thought
they might not be able to understand what they read.
Well, they couldn't, that was the problem.
See the color?
Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, these things we will have no need for later on, after we get them up. Would you be interested?
The thing that would be nice on some of these photographs would be just a note on the back where each of these rooms are. So that we would know. So that somebody in the future would say, well, that's what it is. We would be really happy.
Yes.
And in the meantime, I think I can find out about the roof.
Yes, I think we've got it someplace around. No, that, as I say that, and of course, we were involved with McEachern on establishing the College of Surgeons and the College of Hospital Administration and all of that in the very beginning, too.
Now, so, where is that?
Well, you see, you notice the doctors have the FACH and, after the name of South American.
Yes.
Well, Dr. McEachern was the chap who was a graduate of McGill.
Mm-hmm.
Very good friend. I've got letters, personal letters in my files from him. He and I were very close friends. And, see, this was all in the beginning of time, you see. And so if you were a president of something in, like, the state of California, and you were going back then, that gave you a certain amount of recognition, as it were. But Dr. McEachern is the one that started the first, wrote the first, nearly the first book on hospital administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who's from McGill in Canada, and he developed the American College of Surgeons.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Jones was one of the original members to make up the American College of Surgeons. So, these tied in too. When I knew my Dr. McEachern and he knew Dr. McEachern, and Dr. McEachern said I was all right, that was one of the things that helped getting into the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's those days.
So when you went into the clinic, did you go into a brand new job situation? I mean, were you replacing somebody else?
Well, they had eight, and no, they only had six. It was six. They had six. What they call business managers in 3 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came, they said, you're only going to last 6 months? And I said, yep, I'm going to have an awful lot of fun for 6 months. Oh, yeah.
40 years later.
Oh, yes, that's a fun. Oh, yes. Oh, those are nice days. Every time in which you could explore, in which you could do things, in which you could expand in your own work of, on the hospitals and doing for people, which really made it. And then, too, we had a group of employees that were tops in their new exceptional group. And they were very loyal, and times when there'd be problems would come up, and during the war and so forth, anything would happen, and the phones would go out or something, the employees would all start strolling in, and they'd come by my desk in the office and say, Mr. B, is there anything I can do for you? And I said, oh, no, just stand around and see if something happens. But it was a wonderful relationship
throughout
that whole year.
Mm-hmm.
But, what's that?
I mean,
you paid
the
$10.
It was $35.
Well, you got
this.
Oh, yeah, this report is included. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely like a photocopy of this, you know. And what do you think? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless you're not here, I'll put it in the gear that's set on the panel. Sure, in two generations, it's $5. Anesthetic fee, $10. Operating room for major surgery, $1,500. IM and control treatment, $15. $2. Therapy, $2.
Do you have the hysterectomies over there? Did you?
Not at all.
Yeah. Just see, then that gets a little bit of a history of the
and
what we did.
Did you like them?
One of them each time. I mean, there was one letter from me on each one. So that's made it, you can see the...
Body
number one,
right there, 1964. I see. And then, of course, we have
kidney. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got, when Judy was born, I think I had an article in there on that. And when the grandchildren came along, I had an article, and there was enough, you know. So, yeah.
It came out how often?
Well, once a year, once a month, wasn't it? Once a month it came out. Yeah, once a month it came out.
See, that was after the hospital thing.
Yeah,
We had a prize for who gave it to me. I think we gave it, only.
Yeah, right.
And
we
had it
now. Oh, yes. But that was a time when you could explore new ideas and you could select the ones that you liked and you'd test the ones that didn't work. And
mm-hmm.
all of these things that it was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was certainly a family feeling.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't think of that.
No, not.
Well,
you can't. You can understand why we could not carry on. We couldn't. We couldn't give this type of service. We couldn't. What the people expect, we couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
the patient was important, and everyone in the place knew the patient was important. The
mm-hmm.
patient was the reason you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord help you if you didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the way we went. And And not only that, it everybody seemed to have that same feeling, too, that you'd been there for. We had people that stayed with us for years and years, 20 and 30 years. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like the dietitian stayed there for, I guess, she came in, she ran the dietary department at Arrowhead, and that is at the hotel, and then she came to us and very good recommendations, and she stayed with us all those years too.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have much, we didn't have too much of a turnover, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you were talking before we began recording about the politics of building hospitals. You said a little bit about it, I guess, with the Hill-Burton.
Oh, the Hill-Burton Fund. Yes, that came out, and it was quite interesting in developing it, because at no time have any figures ever been worked out as to the needs and how you would take a locality and say how many beds are needed and for what services and at what age groups and so forth that you would have, and how would you design a hospital and how many beds would they need and how could you get over-bedded there or under-bedded at that time. And that's when we had to figure out the length of stay on should be in the hospital, and that's where the 4.5 beds per thousand came in, because we had to get a figure out of the air. And in St. Louis, we were at a meeting. There were five or six of us sitting and resting after the day, and we decided that we'd pick a figure of up to 4.5 beds per thousand, and it still stuck. It's still 4.5 beds per thousand. But nowadays, they've got it much more refined now. But I mean, it stuck for years and years and years. But there were so many of these things that So during that period of time, the Department of Public Health, the Bureau of Hospitals, a guy by the name of Gordon Cummings was there, and had charge of that department. And he helped develop with University of California at Berkeley these mathematical models that we would work on.
Mm-hmm.
And as to needs, and we could come into an area and develop, and at that time we had the building of new towns in California along the freeways.
Mm-hmm.
And as you would build a freeway and an off ramp, and you start a small town going through one of the major highways, and you start a community there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have to decide, I mean, of course, everything was there, fire protection and all these other, and police and all that had to be determined from there too. But then as they grew, then you had to determine the growth and the need for beds there. So then from that point, the Department of Public Health became the licensing. The hospitals and clinics would have to be licensed. And so you'd have to go for permission to build, even though it was your own money. The build, or if you want, like the Catholic Order would have to get permission to build a hospital of a certain size to do certain much, which would have to be approved. And it would be inspected several times a year to see that they conform to these certain rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. So this is how these, when we were talking, we had to start developing those rules because none of them existed. Now, you can see, as you read in the papers, even your nursing homes and everything, as they should be, and they developed alongside as a parallel, all of these things developed then. So you see accreditation of hospitals, and of course, accreditation of hospitals goes farther and beyond there, and that's where you get both the state approves it, the hospital and its building and construction. See, community now can't change any of their beds over there without permission of the state. But it's not hard to get as long as it's... Then, along with that came the College of Surgeons, which then came in and developed the rules for surgeries. And for them, that came in, of course, with surgery, it came into the question of sterilization. And then of the sterilizers and all that, and then the ancillary equipment, and then the care of the instruments, all this all came there. Then along with that came other rules and regulations as to the bedding of the beds, which came in through the American College, which came in then through the what was called the Accreditation Commission, which all these groups joined together mm-hmm. under this one commission. Mm-hmm. And that was where that was... the final thing that Dr. McCurkin had done was work on this final situation. Then along with that, there had to be nomenclature that had to be developed. Because, in other words, the name of one disease had to be the same for all places, and the name for one procedure had to be the same. And then there was the cataloging of this and putting them together, you see, and so that you could define the cases, and you could pick out the length of stay of certain types of cases in certain institutions and compare one with the other. Mm-hmm. All of these things are all in this process of development during this period of time, which made it quite interesting. Then with that, Ken, then you brought on top of that the influx of insurance, and Blue Cross, and Blue Shield, and those things. We were involved in that with Blue Cross from the time that we had three employees. This is that Blue Cross, I mean, we were involved with it. There was no pay because it was a charitable organization. But then the growth of that and the type of policies that were written in the beginning, then the changes that came about. So this had been... Then the growth of Blue Cross, as it really grew over there, we started out with using the Boy Scouts place in Los Angeles. And our first out of town that we got to beside Long Beach was Santa Barbara. We got an office up in Santa Barbara. Then from there we transferred into a furniture wholesale house that they had, and so we got that for Blue Cross. And then we developed further than that. We went into where the old court building on Wilshire Boulevard, where the court automobile was made. We took over that. And then we got to court, and then we went over to Vermont and Avenue and Sunset in Vermont. And on that hill there, and we bought that whole area for the same amount of money that we had invested in the court building. At that time, the state of California said, Blue Cross of Southern California has got to stop this real estate expansion because you're making profit on all of this as you go along, and therefore you'll curb your real estate. So by that time, we had half this hill over there, so it was perfectly all right. And from that time, of course, you've got Kaiser's over there and Children's and other places to come in there. And Valley Pioneer Presbyterian, Raleigh, Sullivan, Bob, in the same area as it just and expanded in that area. And of course, right there is along with Cedars is that area too. So, but all of this came about, and all of these things had to be developed, and new policies had to be written, and we didn't know. We would try out policies, and we'd say, "Now, we believe people are honest, and therefore we will sell 500 policies in San Diego without any question of examination or any question of anything that happened to them in the past. Let us try that." Well, we only sold that many because they did. They came in, they used it, and then left the plan. And over 2/3 of them did that. So we found out that that wasn't the way to do it. You had to have some exclusion of some people. Then we had to change our minds when we went into groups, as you would. But then the groups that you had, when you were able to take employed individuals of certain ages, like the people with Douglas, the people that had gone into Douglas, have already had a physical examination by Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also got somebody to see they're taken care of. And they're all within the age group of, say, 19, 20 up to the age of 55, something. So you've got that best area to ensure, you see, because you don't have the... You have plenty of the childbearing age, but you can figure that out mathematically. Mm-hmm. So all of these things, these were unknowns, if you can understand. All the things that we know now were all unknown and had to be tried out. And that's where it became so doggone fascinating. And that's where it became fun, you know?
Right. You want a challenge to attempt to do these things.
Yes, well, not only that, and the opportunity, if you had an idea, of trying it on a base to see whether it would work or not, see?
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself, the challenge there that you had to do it, but the fact is that you had full range of thought and you had the possibility of trying it, see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now to try things with all the rules and regulations that you had, of course nobody was ever hurt by any of this. So it was always to the advantage of somebody, just like talking about down in San Diego. The people it was advantageous for them to take advantage of it. But it wasn't for Blue Cross because we couldn't afford to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you learned about human nature along with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, all this was pretty much then after the war and with the growth of the population in Southern California and the building of the hospital.
It started out in right after the Depression. I think the Depression, of course, the Depression brought forth Blue Cross, you see.
Oh.
Blue Cross would not have been, it might have been here later. Down in Texas in Baylor, the school teachers got together, and they decided the cost of hospitalization during the Depression was probably $3 to $5 a day. So they got together and started this group, and that's where Blue Cross started.
Mm-hmm.
Then it became a good idea down there, and then it grew.
Mm-hmm.
And other communities brought it. Rich Herman ran one of the hospitals over in Los Angeles, and he took care of the California hospital, which is one of the oldest hospitals in the area, and helped out. He took care of the talking to the doctors in Los Angeles, and I took care of talking to the doctors outside of Los Angeles. We went in there, and it was something new, and of course it was almost a communist type of thinking that we had, according to some of our opposition of trying to do this. And so we had to prove ourselves through an awful lot of things to get us started.
Do you think the Social Security Act, when it was first passed, was an influence in developing this kind of thinking, of prepaid
No, we had it, well, yes, it did, it helped, but well, see, we were in before that, before Social Security. So our studies on that came out of the first part. When did Social Security start? Do you know?
36 or 37.
I would say it ran parallel. I don't recall one affecting the other.